Okay, my talk today is about county defense, studying defensive proficiency ratings at player level. And I first wanted to do a little introduction of myself. And for the past 3 years, I have worked as the creator and developer of the Hartwell Times Forecast, also known as the Oliver Projections, which are available at the Hartwell Times as a subscription. And the forecasts include analysis of batting, pitching, and fielding in order to profile the skills and rank players who are in the major leagues, but also minor leagues, foreign leagues, and college. And the defense has been a big part of this. And today I'm going to be going into explaining some of the procedures that I use and have ideas I've had for a while, but it's a little different than some others. Now, before coming to the Hartwell Times, I had written briefly for Scene Heads and joined the Paul Wires, Russell Carlton, Eric Simon, and Matt Swartz at Statsby. A short stint at Fangraphs that did terrible, which referred to as about 5 minutes, and then in 2009 I was a finalist in the Baseball Prospectus competition. Now, in my regular job, I work as a photogrammetrist. We do mapping products from 3D aerial photography, but where it applies most to the baseball is that it's data collection. And the client comes to us with a set of specs, what they want to learn from the data, and I'm in a position where I have a responsibility to help develop procedures, train the other employees on what is the most efficient way to collect the data so that we are accurate on time, on our budget, and ways to make the smallest changes in a procedure, but we'll get the biggest return in most value added in information. And I apply that a lot in my baseball work. Now, what I'd like to have is a fact-based defensive system. And I'd say that defensive metrics are broken in the sense that I think that we're losing confidence of the Sager metric playing line fans and also the traditional fans who are used to stats calculated just by, you know, addition and division. And most public metrics, including my own so far, have usually publish just a single number for a player. We say how many runs per season could be broken down by position. And sometimes you have some separate ratings for range, errors, and arms. But almost always we get this number that comes out of a black box. It's full of complex calculations and assumptions. And what I want to propose today is a new framework, a transparent approach to collecting and presenting counted defensive stats. And now here in the 21st century, our official defensive stats still consists of putouts, assists, errors, and double plays. With playing time stats such as games started and innings being added in recent years in places like Baseball Reference and Fangraphs. But one of the other things I've learned from the mapping industry is that if our collected data is not sufficiently detailed, there's no good way to massage the data and put it together into what's needed. You've lost context. On the other hand, granular data can always be merged together when the collected data, when that level is not required. If you need that level for fine detail, good. If you don't, you still don't have a problem. Now, way back in the beginning of baseball, in the 1800s, it was thought that defense had little to do with hits, and it was only necessary to record whenever the fielder muffed the short out. But over time, some stats, such as cross stealing, ground ball play, batter strikeouts, have been added to the official record as the heat became apparent. But on defense, we've only ever officially recorded the outs and errors, but not the hits for each fielder, so that level of detail has never appeared in the scoring record. Now, it was about 1983 in the Bill James abstract that he introduced defense efficiency ratio as a team stat. It was a percentage of all batted balls on the field that the defense made into an out. And this is a stat that's still used. I think Baseball Prospectus lists this among their team defensive stats. Now, James had argued that any ball, unless it's hit so high off the wall, such as Green Monster in Fenway, that it was unreachable, that any ball was a potential out or a potential hit. So, really, this goes away to from, like, the zone rating, where you had to make a judgment of whether a ball was in a 50% range or it wasn't, and sometimes you do that, you might have a sharp drop-off from one grouping to another. So, this is a big zone. Left fielder zone is left field. Now, at the time that James published this, I had realized that I could extend this measure to individual defense by assigning each batted ball to a fielder. And then you would have this individual defensive efficiency in the same way, except for these unreachable balls, that the sum of the individual players would add to the team. So what we want to know is which fielder had the best chance to field the ball. Now that is also a subjective measure, but it's much likely less so than deciding whether it was a hit or an error. I think if I got a bunch of us together and watched the plays, we'd have a pretty good agreement on whether a ground ball through the hole was the play of the third baseman or the shortstop. So at that time, I was in college, but I was working as the statistician and scorekeeper for our local summer league, and they were the host league of the All-American Amateur Baseball Association National Tournament. But since I hired scorekeepers, I developed a system of pen and paper that I taught those scores that was able to record ground balls, line drives, fly balls, pop-ups, response to the field. And I do away money my college hours with play-by-play, but it was better play-by-play than was available then in Major League Baseball, and actually than it still is, because we currently have stringers and video scouts who are recording batted ball locations. We're able to, even with the remote sensing of hit FX, to attempt to more accurately measure the location of the batted balls, but 30 years later, we still don't, in any publicly available data, know who was the responsible fielder. So, one of the players on the field is responsible for having the best chance to make an out on each ball, and there is another player who is responsible. There is a player who's responsible for retrieving the ball. A lot of times that's the same player, but it's not always. And we are only recording the retrieving fielder. And then we have to use probability calculation distributions to calculate, as I said, whether that ground ball between third base and shortstop, who it belonged to, when we could have simply noted in the original scoring record. Here's some examples just of rewording some phrases that are in Game Day, and then sort of from a game the other day, but say like, Alex Presley singles on a ground ball to right fielder, Andy Shaw, that's by second baseman Robert Andino. Well, then we know that that was Andino's ball and not the first baseman. That's something that the score can see. Or, Rymel doubles on to left fielder Presley on a fly ball to center fielder McCutcheon. As many times I've seen where you have a fly ball in the gap, and the center fielder goes over, doesn't make the play, but then the other fielder picks the ball up on the warning track and throws it in. Unfortunately, looking at the game day data, I have to assume that the guy who threw it in was the guy who was catching it, and that's going to be an error in the record of that ball's going to be assigned to the wrong outfielder as to who had the responsibility to catch it. Here's an example of the score sheet that I had. Now, this is a game from 1987. I was the scorekeeper. Denny Nagel was the pitcher for the Baltimore Johnnies against the New Orleans Recreation Department. And the green symbols are the hits. So I had my four-color red pen at the time. But in this, we're in the first inning. Brown singles into the hole, past third, and into left field, where I have the 7-H with a little thought over the left side of the H. So it's through the hole, but on the third base side. Arcemann grounds a single into the hole on the right side, past second, and into right field. And then Walker lines a single in front of the left field. Second inning, Faust singles off the left field screen, the S, there's in the stadium in Johnstown, there's a big high left field screen. But that was an uncatchable ball, so that way I've noted that. I will count it against the outfielder attempting to catch the ball, but it would count for the outfielder on handling the rebound and trying to prevent extra bases. And one in the fifth inning where Arcemann again grounded a single up the middle, past the second baseman in the center field. But once the responsible fielder is added to the scoring record, then our count of defensive stats can be expanded to include hits, extra base hits, total bases, etc. Now, we do have the biases and the park factors in the data, but that's also true of the batting and the pitching. As we do with them, I would like to start with a published set of factual data, which then can be the basis of the analysis. Now, what kind of defensive stats can we get with only position and division? Now, for infielders, this is not necessarily an exhaustive list, but the main things that we want our infielders to do, catch the balls in the air, keep the ground balls in the infield, get outs on the balls in the infield, and start and hit a double plays. And here is an example of how I've counted some stats. Now, this is what I've done to the best of my ability of parsing the game day data. I have had to make some assumptions on the ground ball hits to the outfield. It is not, as I said, it's not marked in there, and I've used the angles to get a shared responsibility on balls that are between the fielders. But the ground balls, the infield hits, reached on errors, that is, to the best I can tell, the factual data. And first, I get my slide on Now, getting that I wanted to compare a couple players. Now, Tulowitzki is one of the best and most consistent shortstop in the major leagues. And if you look under the column for his range, where range is the percentage of ground balls that he was able to keep in the infield, not allow ground ball hits to the outfield, over the last four seasons, it's only changed 4 points from high to low, from 812 to 816, and that has ranked him in among major league players, qualifying major league players, between 9th and 17th. So it's not quite, you know, the top tier, but it's still in the top half, a very good rating. Now, Tulowitzki's hand rating has still been pretty consistent between 901 and 922, but relatively that ranks higher between 2nd and 7th. And as he's done well and above average on both, he's had the top 5 defense efficiency rating 3 out of those 4 years, and even the other years he was 10 and 12. Now, the other one, Derek Jeter, his range has been between 751 and 800 over the past 7 years, which ranks between 24th and 30th. Now, although he lacks in range, Jeter has been shorthanded 4 times, ranking in the top 10, although that measure has dropped off in the past 2 seasons. Like I said, I got a little bit out of order and trying to catch up. But, now when an infielder prevents a ground ball from reaching the outfield but fails to get out, it's still a play not made. So if you're doing a plus minus system, then yes, it's a play not made. However, if you want to apply linear weights to calculate the run value, then the infielder is charged with fewer runs for the infield hit than one that went to the outfielders. There's much less chance of runners advancing more than one makes. Therefore, a ground hit is worse than an infield hit, which is worse than an out. with the outfielders and catch balls in the air, prevent batters from stretching extra bases on hits, and prevent runners from advancing. Also mentioned at this point that with various defensive metrics that are on the market, there are not everybody uses the same mix of these. Now, I have, in my current one, I use the preventing batters from stretching the extra base hits, but UZR doesn't. UZR uses the existing base runners, preventing them from advancing, but I don't yet because I didn't have the data available, and I have recently gotten it, but I haven't had a chance to code it yet. So you can then, even when comparing different systems, get some different answers because different numbers were being used. Now again, using a good and poor fielder playing the same position, but looking at year-to-year records, and here Crawford has consistent, always been in the top half of players in left field in 2008. He had an excellent season with a 647 defense efficiency, which for outfielders is the same as the catch rate, and led the league that year. And has always been near the top. That his lowest that he had was 558, which last year was in Boston. And in left field, he obviously had some balls hit off the wall, which we don't know exactly which balls were hit off the wall, but given enough time, you can know basically what percentage. And that would come later when they talk about adjustments. On the other hand, you see Raul Banez has never ranked above 21st in the range. Now, I did a average DER and range and hands at each position, and the they said that the defensive for infielders, the defense efficiency was the total number of ground balls hit to each infielder and turned into an out. That's an overall out or not out rating. That was the extension of the team DER and the individual record. Then breaking that down into different skills, I have the range and the hands. Which I discussed on the leader and gives leaderboards. But where the range is keeping the balls in the infield, whether they are hits or not, but then once the balls are in the infield, hands is what percentage of those balls in the infield did you get them out? And see the players on the left side, third baseman and shortstop, don't get as many outs on the infield grounders. I have included the standard deviation, and then I also did a split half correlation test to see how long does it take these stats to stabilize, because we've heard a lot of talk like maybe even 3 years worth of defensive stats to get a good idea. And what I found was with the range of both the infielders and the outfielders that needed a little less than a season to get where it was 50% the player and 50% random fluctuation. And also that there's higher regression totals at shortstop and especially in center field. And one of the things there is that the regression formula considers the amount of variation between players, the extreme high and low compared to the league average, but also what the spread is at each position. So center field and shortstop are the premier defensive positions. The best fielders on the team are going to go to those positions, so there's not as much difference in talent between the best and worst shortstops. There's more difference in talent between best and worst third baseman or left fielders, so you can more quickly tell who good left fielder shortstop third baseman is in shortstop or center field. But the hands rating, which is both the reach target error and infield hits, does take on average, it varies by position, but it takes about a year and a half. Now, we're going to look at the later charts in a minute, but typically, though, you have about 100 points that separate best and worst DER and also some of the other rates that have weak position. And this means that only about 10%, for only about 50% of the bad calls is the outcome only determined by the fielder. And I go back to the previous slide, in my first column I have that over 162 games, there's an average of 593 ground balls at the shortstop. Well, if only 10% of those really are not predetermined, then you have about 60 balls over the course of 162 games where you have a chance to measure the difference between the fielders. And then, not everybody plays 162 games, and those are the very outliers of the best and worst. So if you think most players are going to maybe be in there 140, 145 games, and once you get past the one or two very best and very worst, you might only have 50 or 60 or even 40 plays that are separated fielders, and that also, if there's a little less of a run play, that's going to limit you to in the range of, say, plus or minus 20 or 25 for the center field and shortstop, which get the most balls in, and proportionally less for the other positions that get fewer. So at this point, I wanted to then look at some leaderboards, and so you can get see an idea of if this actually works or not. Now, among the 30 first basemen who were assigned the most ground balls over the past 7 seasons, Albert Pujols converted the highest percentage in the outs, while Ryan Barco and Billy Butler had the lowest rates. In 2011, Adrian Gonzalez was ahead of Pujols, while Miguel Cabrera and Lyle Overbay were the trailers. And over the past 7 years, Overbay has had the third highest overall DER, but last year he recorded a very poor year, and as a Pirates fan, I remember many people commenting about how he did go during that first base. But, I think you can see that the guys that you expect to be at the top are there, and also at the bottom. And again, this is the DER, which is the percentage of ground balls that are turned into outs. Now, second base, you have leaders, 7-year leaders of Matsui, Hill, Ellis, and Pedroia, while Higuchi, Weeks, and Pence are at the bottom. Hill led in 2011, just ahead of Kempinger and Ellis, and Justin Turner, both mentioned at the bottom. And another thing, too, if you look at the leaderboards, you can see, okay, Matsui was first over 7 years at 765, Hill was 763. I mean, it's like 2 points of batting average. It's really not that much. So it might be more meaningful, to say, well, he was in the top 5 or the top 10. You can do some general groupings. And I like the way with the pursuit pennant and some of the fielding ratings. I think there were 7 groups, 6 or 7 groups, but where you went from excellent to very good to average, fair, poor. Because sometimes you shouldn't be arguing over a few points, but it's good to try to get the players ranked at least in the groups of 5 as you head from the top to the bottom. Third base of the 7-year period, we've got Creedy, Longoria, Hanahan, Holden at the top, Reynolds, Tien, Cabrera, Encarnacion at the bottom. Last year, Lowry, Colasco, Beltre, and Sandoval. Red Pop, and Kuzminoff, Reynolds, and Johnson Trail. Now shortstop, again at the top is past year with Paul Giannis, Ronnie Cedeno, and Kulowitzki with Jeter, Ramirez, and Carrio at the bottom. Looking at some outfielders, and again, these are catch rates. So in left field, 7-year leaders, Burns, Pasednik, Clark, Crawford, the trailers, Carlos Lee, Dunn, Pearl, Manny Ramirez. And last year, as you might expect, Brett Gardner, Sam Fuld at the top, and actually I was a little surprised to see Elvis Presley at the bottom, and way at the bottom. He had some better years than that in the minor leagues, but his first year in the major leagues did not do as well. And just mention that, it's because actually, I'm being a Pirate fan, but Lasting's Village had struggled mightily in left field. Pirates brought up Jose Tomita, and he was immediately about 20 runs a year better than Village. And then they put Presley in left field and put Tomita in right, and the production of left field went right back down again. So it did look like there was a clear advantage with Tomita over the others. In center field, Franklin Gutierrez by a wide margin, 30 points over Carlos Gomez over the past 7 years. And down at the bottom, Ernie Wells, Gary Matthews Jr., Mark Kotze. And last year, DeVernes and, well, actually, Gutierrez last year was only about 11 points below what his 7-year average was, but there were four other guys who had some pretty good years. If you got ahead of him, Stan Torres or Joseph Jackson. And in right field, and you know, one that I was a little surprised that he was consistently near the top in different seasons, Austin Kearns, ahead of Domé Ishiro and Jay Bruce. But then, of course, the guys we expect to see at the bottom, Kadire, Abreu, and Hawk. Jason Hayward led in right field last year, and he had a very strong year in his rookie year in 2010. But Shin-Chu Chu, not only with his batting, but also the fielding, had dropped off from an overall number 12 ranking, which included 2011, down to 2028 last year. Now, the infielders, I want to go back and show, these are the 7-year totals, but separate rankings with the range and the hands. Now, Pujols over the last 7 years has the best range at first base, but he's only 13th in converting infield grounders into outs. And even more pronounced, Joey Votto is 5th in the range, but 29th in hands. Going in the other direction, Sean Casey, while he was still playing, was 3rd in hands, only 23rd in range. Soft hands, the statue of 1st. Richie Sexton, 6th in hands, 30th in range. Casey Kochman and Kevin Youkilis ranked in the top 10 in both, while Billy Butler and Ryan Barco here are down the bottom in both. Now, 2nd base, Dustin Pedroia and Ricky Weeks have shown the same range, ranked 12th and 13th. However, while Pedroia is the most sure-handed in his position over the past 7 years, Weeks is by far the worst. In 7% more chances, Weeks has allowed more than twice as many infield hits and more than 3 times as many runners to reach base on errors than Pedroia. Now, Hill, Matsui, Ellis, and Grudzelanek were the ones who ranked in the top 10 in both range and hands, while Iguchi, Durham, Ugglett, and Marcus Giles were the ones who were in the bottom 10 in month. And at 3rd, Evan Longoria by a large margin, the best range of any third baseman over the past 7 years, but he only ranks 24th on shorthandedness. Mark Reynolds is in the middle, 14th on range, but dead last in hands, just below E5, Edwin Encarnacion. Eric Chavez has shown the best hands, but only 26th in range. Creedy and Hanahan rank at the bottom of both, while Encarnacion and Harris Ramirez are near the bottom. And then at shortstop, the Pomo Rescale, second in range, first in hands. And so I think that he was very deserving of his Gold Gloves. On the other hand, Derek Jeter, who also collected multiple Gold Gloves, but that was done by regularly finishing in the top 10 in his in hands. And I had previously done these measures with record sheet data going back years. But Jeter is ahead of only Unieski Betancourt in the more subtle concern ranking range. And I describe this as, you know, Jeter is easy to see on the highlight reels. Making an outstanding play, you don't see very often Jeter booting a play. But it's much harder to remember that maybe once a week there's an extra ball that got through the hole in shortstop. But those were, you know, his lack of range, and they do add up. Now, those preceding charts rank the players by just their unadjusted raw stats. Those numbers are subject to several biases, and notably ballpark factors, handedness of the batter, the base out situation if the ball was bunted, and the ground ball rate of the pitcher. Right. Now, the new Busch Stadium in St. Louis increases ground ball hits to the outfield by 11%, while Petco Park in San Diego depresses them by 17%. This factor is most likely attributable to a combination of the length of the grass and the hardness of the turf. And historically, artificial turfs have ranked ahead of grass, with Philadelphia's Veterans Stadium being the fastest of the artificial turfs. And then each fielder's range values can be adjusted to account for this ballpark factor. Now, Chicago's Wrigley Field sees 9% more infield hits and reached on air than when the same teams play on the road, while fielders got the surest bounces at Camden Yards, RFK Stadium, and Petco Park. And again, each fielder's hands rating can be adjusted by this fact. And Fenway Park allows the highest relative percentage of fly ball hits, but this factor would need to be broken down at least by the three outfield positions, which I have not shown here. But also the Fenway's high mark comes from many balls that are hit off the Green Monster. And these are in fact uncatchable, should not be counted against the fielder. And a more detailed play-by-play would mark the balls that way, but not having that, we do know though it is a constant factor and can be accounted for by comparing each left fielder in Fenway to the others who have played there. Now, although this is not a part of the discussion of defense, this slide shows the foul fly factors for each park, where Wrigley allows the fewest foul flies, where the most are caught for fouls in Oakland. And that can have some pretty severe effects on the batting pitching stats. And one last park factor, this is showing everything, but you want an illustration of why it is hard to score runs in Petco Park. And if you look down, this is an alphabetical order, so San Diego is sixth from the bottom. But Petco Park allows more than an average amount of foul flies. It is the hardest park in the major leagues to get a ground ball hit to the outfield. It's the hardest ballpark to get an infield hit. It's 27th in air ball hits and 30th in home runs. So almost anything having to do with offense is severely depressed in that ballpark. Now, as far as the right-handed versus left-handed batters, overall the easiest ground balls to field are the ones that are pulled. Third baseman will make outs on 86% of the grounders by the right-handed batter, but only 79% those hit by left-handed batters. Then in the outfield, the pattern is reversed, with pulled air balls almost 50% more likely to be hits than those hit to the opposite field. So pitching staff heavy on left-handers will see many more right-handed batters to the detriment of the left fielder's rating, but to the benefit of the right fielder. And when runners are being held first or when the middle infielders position themselves for possible double play, they do not place themselves in the same position as they do when they're in base runners. The changes are made to avoid stolen bases or gain double plays, but it's done at the expense of less range. The range is reduced even more so when the infield is playing in, but there is no public data reporting those situations. But as you can see, there can be some light variances between the different base out situations. The last two columns where I have two outs and less than two outs. Finally, as I wrote about in this year's Hardball Times annual, a pitcher's ground ball rate has a large... Now, very few bunts reach the shortstop or second baseman, but when that does occur, the batter almost always reaches base. But pitchers lose 0.064 from their DER fielding bunts, while the catchers see little change, 12 points, as the non-bunt grounders fielded by catchers are quite similar to those that are bunted. First baseman lose 103, while third baseman lose 114. And again, reviewing these last few slides on the different factors that when you do want to make the adjustments, these are some of the major things to consider on what makes balls more or less easy to field. As I wrote in this year's Hardball Times annual, pitcher's ground ball rate has a large influence in the batting average on balls in play. I know a lot has been written over the last 10 years about pitchers not controlling the batting average on balls in play, but the one thing they do control is their ground ball rate. And there is a very discernible pattern in the amount of hits that are allowed. So here, as a group, pitchers who have a 30% ground ball rate, the batted balls against them have an average vertical angle from hit FX of 21 degrees. The low ground ball pitchers allow a few more infield hits than the high ground ball pitchers. They allow 25% more ground ball hits than the high ground ball pitchers, and they allow 25% fewer air ball hits. It's still 25% more ground ball or 25% fewer air balls going to make a big difference on how you rate your outfielders or the infielders based on the ground ball tendencies of the pitching staff. And one of the things that Vince DiNardo just mentioned one of his points here in the last hour was he was talking about the big ballparks and small ballparks and gave some pitching staffs that had fly ball pitchers and that they had good cumulative outfield ratings and the ground ball staffs that had good cumulative infield ratings, but that could be confusing some of the cause and effect because actually fly ball pitchers get easier fly balls and ground ball pitchers get easier ground balls, so they feel easier. So, why stick with play-by-play? With the advent of the remote sensing technologies such as FieldFX and TrackMan, you might ask if a defensive metric based on play-by-play will soon be outdated. But first, as we argued, we need a better set, public set of fielding stats in the same fashion as we are used to seeing with batting and pitching, and a set of stats that the masses of fans can trust and understand. None of this advanced data is public, and if it does at some point, it will likely only be for seasons several years past. And also, the new technologies have a much smaller presence in the minor leagues than where they are. Even with PitchFX, where it is available in the minor leagues, it's private to just 22 teams, and especially college and other non-major league affiliated leagues. Now, as I did combining the HitFX data with the play-by-play for my article in this year's annual, where you have remote sensing and play-by-play both available in the major leagues, looking at them together, you can get a better understanding of how to analyze the play-by-play, knowing, being able to prove why certain things are true and knowing why they're true. And then with that increased understanding of how to use the play-by-play, then you can go to the leagues for past seasons where the new technologies do not exist and better apply your knowledge of the play-by-play. And so one of the things that I was proud of with the Hardball Punch forecast is the ability to get fielding ratings on the minor leaguers, because the game day data extends down into the rookie leagues and the winter leagues. And so I'm able to use the same formulas on the minor leagues that have the game day data as I do the majors. So most of the other places, if you go to Fangraphs or BIS and that, that what they publish is only for the major leagues. And I think BIS does at least a minor league data, but again, it's private for the teams only. But you know, through using this framework, I am able to use the game day data to provide the same level of quality of fielding data for the minor leagues as I do for the major leagues. And that's the end, and it's exactly 4:30. But if anybody has any questions, I'm glad to answer. Michael,
can you explain a little bit more how you design that ball?
Okay. That, because of the limitations of the data, of not knowing the responsible fielder, that is the one thing that I have to guess on. And I wish I didn't have to, but what I've done is game day records the XY coordinate according to the stringer of where the ball was picked up. And so even if it's a, in this case where I have a ground ball hit that goes to the outfield, sometimes there are deflections that are unaccounted for. But they record the XY of where the ball is retrieved. I calculate the angle. Then I'll say, okay, at that angle, when the ball did stay in an infield, what percent were third baseman and what percent were shortstop? And then I assign a split responsibility on that particular ground ball hit. So if that angle was a 70% third base, 30% shortstop on balls that they got to, then I'll say, okay, for that particular ball, I'll give it 70% to the third baseman, 30% to the shortstop, and then I'll sum them up for the season to get the ball. And I thought that was the best way to try to, and efficiently coding it too, that it wouldn't take hours to crunch through, that would give me a fairly good answer. Yes?
Is there a certain program you use to run your regression?
All my data is in MySQL database. I have some Python programs that download game day data directly into the MySQL, and then I use my own coding. And for the split correlation there, I just had done the research on what the procedure and formulas were for it, and I just coded that into my existing database. Basically, but in more detail, the procedure for the correlation, I created A and B bins. I put all the plays over the past 7 years in chronological order. So then that way, I tried to compensate for park factors in that by balls that were in similar bins should be roughly in the same situations. And so that just every other play, A, B, A, B, A, B, did them in groups of 100, and then went for, okay, 100 plays, 200 plays, 300 plays, measured the correlation of each between bin A and B, bin B, and I'm being waved at by the man in the back row that we are out of time.